Nathan Tolberg for Birds News. South Africa has gone past 50 days without load shedding, and that would not have happened without the intervention of the private sector. And we have James Mackay, the CEO of the Energy Council of South Africa, in the Birds News studio to talk about load shedding, energy policy, and the partnership of Business for SA with the government. James, a very warm welcome to you.
Thanks, Linda. It's wonderful to be on Birds News.
Well, did business step in and save the day with load shedding this year?
Linda, I think that we've got to be quite clear on the way we articulate this. It's a partnership. And I think it's very important context that we reflect back on sort of years of state capture and corruption, which people will know about who follow South Africa. In the build-up through to 2023, I think importantly, really what we saw is sort of the KZN riots in July 21. We then saw really a collapsing Eskom in the form of load shedding and very kind of big societal impact. Less visible in society was also a sort of a very steady, rapidly declining Transnet in form of rail and port performance. And then towards the end of 22, really then André de Ruyter came out with a large accusation around corruption and non-performance at the power station, which actually was then echoed internationally by the Financial Action Task Force globally, putting South Africa on the grey list. So I think really this was the low point, a huge turning point where government, business sat down together. And I think credit to the president, previous political dispensations didn't and weren't prepared to accept sort of an engagement process with business. But everyone agreed we have to do something. And this is not about business can't do it on their own and government can't do it on their own. We have to create a partnership. We have to focus on delivery. And to be honest, we've got to have some really hard discussions and we've got to move quickly. So that was how the partnership was framed and how it was kind of sort of born, so to speak. We now 12 months on, and certainly business is not lifting the spanners, you know, at the power stations. We're not doing the work of Eskom. But I think that the mobilizing capacity, creating, you know, transparent, robust conversations around the planning, the actions, are things in place? Are things resourced? If commitments are being made, are people being held accountable? That has made a huge difference. And bearing in mind that the partnership was crafted across the three legs of energy, transport, logistics, crime, and corruption, effectively mirroring what was this crisis that said sort of on the energy, the transport logistics kind of collapse. And then, you know, how do we take corruption seriously and how do we get off the fat of grey list? And at the end of the day, this is all about mobilizing business confidence to unlock investment and grow our economy. So I think put in that context, one sees the partnership in a very different light. And I think also the good news, there's been a commitment that the partnership will continue. So the president and the business CEO leads have said, elections is a date in the calendar, and we're not doing this for political party support. We are working with the government on the day to recover economic growth, create jobs, and get our economy moving. And I think it's a very powerful message, and the message I think is important that that's what people also understand.
Well, there's of course the assumption then that the president will continue. So you are confident that the next government will also honor this?
No, that's why I said we're not doing this for political reasons. And we on the 30th, we will work equally with commitment and enthusiasm with the government of the day. So I think that I'm confident that I think that the elections will be good. They're going to be robust, competitive. But I don't think that we're going to have a fallout. And I think it'll be, in a sense, good for the economy that we start to see competition in our democracy, and we see a robust competition, and that again, that there's greater transparency and accountability, hopefully, that comes out of that.
Well, you still see cynicism among voters who are saying that the lack of load shedding is because of the election. So is it not?
No, I mean, it's not a conspiracy theory. They're not burning diesel to try and, you know, desperately keep the lights on. It's technically not possible to burn enough diesel to get out of load shedding. Otherwise, they would have done it some time ago. I think just, you know, we've got to acknowledge, as I said earlier, there's a lot of skepticism and sort of distrust from years and years and years of poor leadership, bad politics, etc. So we can't just take that off the table. But I think we are at a position now where something really is changing. And a lot of the skeptics are saying, okay, we're seeing it and we recognize, we see the data. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not electioneering. But, you know, we want to see a little bit more of it before we really sold on it. But it comes back to the point that we've got to create now a new look forward approach rather than keep digging into the past and saying, you know, this must be corruption or some sort of conspiracy theory. We really do have to move forward just from an economic and societal sort of perspective. So I think that's the important message that we are focusing on. And the politicians and the politics will be what they will be, I think.
So looking forward, as you said, will we see eventually the back of load shedding? And if so, when?
Yeah, so many have tried to call the date of load shedding and have failed. There is no crystal kind of ball that we can look at. So to give people kind of a little bit of confidence that this didn't just suddenly materialize a month before elections, the technical platform of the turnaround plan and the maintenance recovery plan was actually laid probably, you know, almost 2.5-3 years ago. I mean, it was started under the André de Ruyter and Jan Oberholzer sort of leadership. What was very important at that time, I think the political understanding, support, the financial capability to implement, there was a lot of other things missing. And I think under then Mteto Nyata's chairmanship, very importantly, he created that political support and understanding, focus on implementation and taking urgent action. They then got the National Treasury Debt Relief Bill through, and National Treasury stepped in to help clean up a lot of the procurement aspects that were sort of dogging the maintenance recovery plan. And then, you know, there was a change in leadership. And I think then also Dan Marukani, as the new CEO, has been very good at sort of focusing on lifting the spirits and the pride and the operating focus and the discipline in the organization. And then, you know, business coming in has just also created that sort of focus, confidence, and accountability. So I don't think there's any one person or group who one could say, well done, you've solved load shedding. This really has been a partnership and a lot of work over many hard years. But we've done quite a lot of scenario planning and modeling with government through the NECOM structure. We've looked at various scenarios, and essentially we've said, from a modeled perspective, we can get to stage one load shedding by the end of 2024. There's still work to be done to recover energy security, and that will really then sort of be by the end of 2025. So we said we've turned the corner, we're on the path, and, you know, we're on track.
But I saw the statement from the Minister of Electricity, Mr. Ramaphosa, that the country may be generating too much energy now and are putting power stations on cold reserve. Is that a problem?
Well, it's a better problem to have, but yes. So we must also recognize, importantly, and even the energy modeling and scenario planning we've done around load shedding has a significant component of now rapid growth in wind and solar, far exceeding forecasts and expectations. Even if we just look from 2022 to 23, we had probably 4 times the amount of forecasted behind the meter solar PV being built in South Africa versus what was projected. So this is also making a huge contribution. The system operator in Eskom says, fantastic, solar is very dependable. We see that coming through in the middle of the day. South Africa has wonderful solar resources. Wind is also really starting to kind of create a big impact. It plays very nicely into the evening peaks. And then, you know, we are ending up starting to have surplus generation at certain times of the day. The problem is that the overall coal system remains very unreliable. So there are consistent failures, and the system operator now has to deal with, you know, how the sort of the challenge and instability of those system failures. But it's not necessarily now, I think we're moving out of being able to meet demand. It's about system reliability that is going to be a big challenge for the system operator.
So if we look at this partnership that you have with the government at the moment, what else, where else are you making a difference, like in rail services?
So certainly the partnership has these three key legs. So energy, transport, logistics, and crime and corruption. The transport and logistics work has been focused on a sort of a new master plan, recovering the performance within Transnet across rail and port, And there's been really a significant mobilization then of logistics providers to help support that, get a new transport master plan through cabinet. So they're making good progress. And similarly, in the crime and corruption space, there's now been a not-for-profit company registered called Business Against Crime. And that company is helping to create sort of data forensic and IT capabilities in order to support some of the ambitions around modernizing our sort of crime sort of monitoring capabilities in South Africa. So that's part of it. And then also supporting the NPA in terms of forensic capability, legal audit services in order to prosecute and move through on the corruption cases that came out of the Zondo Commission. Because that is the last step for us to be able to get off the FATF grey list, which is very important to our investment outlook.
Well, if we look, you talked about solar and wind, that we've really, you know, we've motored forward with that. Where is South Africa now in terms of moving towards a net zero carbon emissions?
A very difficult one, Linda, because we've lost a lot of time. And if we look at the sort of the maintenance collapse in coal, we've now had to spend a lot of time and a lot of capital recovering that. We're moving through load shedding. But the previous sort of targets of decommissioning coal, which is how we get our emissions reduction down, has been delayed. So I think we've got to accelerate now and focus on keeping the grid expansion moving. We've now got our Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill has been passed last week by Parliament. It's on the way to the President for assent. That is a huge trigger around reform. So I think importantly, there's at least now a very clear policy direction. So investors and I think business can take a lot more confidence. They know what the forward-looking plan looks like in the energy sector. However, we still need to build the capability and improve on the speed and scale at which we're moving. Only then can we sort of turn around and say, right, we're now confident enough to decommission the coal stations, and then we can start to get to emissions down. So I think there is a little bit of a hiatus, and there's some strategic work and thinking that we've got to do around how do we get back to our net zero pathway. But those are the challenges that we face.
So what about nuclear energy? Where are we there?
Yeah, difficult one, Lynn, because there's so many technologies that will come at us, you know, in this energy transition. It's not just nuclear. And all of them, if we think of things like green hydrogen. So the key to these technologies, are they commercially sort of viable? And yes, we can identify an important technical role in the system for them, but can we afford them? Are they commercially competitive and viable? So I think when it comes to nuclear, we, you know, are finishing, or this year, we've got the second Coburg unit, which is going through midlife intervention, so 20-year extension. That, I think, is on track. There were some good learning curves from the first unit. So we will have Coburg back up and running by the end of this year. You know, I think it's a very reliable, good source. And that is another 20-year extension. New nuclear, the big decision will be, you know, large-scale nuclear really is unaffordable and probably outside of a small developing economy such as South Africa. So we look to new technology and innovation around, you know, small modular reactors. My view there is really it's only the Chinese that is going to be able to lead this space. I think their target is 160 gigawatts of new nuclear to be built by 2040. The rest of the world, unfortunately, I think have got very aging fleets and are actually still shutting down nuclear. So I think that, in my view, if the Chinese can show the technology breakthroughs that brings the cost curves down, brings those learning curves through in the same way as we saw wind and solar, nuclear will be a great application. But I don't see really in sort of the French, the US, we know, you know, UK is really struggling with their Hinkley project. Those are not models that we're seeing speed and scale and price that's, you know, commercially viable for an economy like South Africa. So I think there's a place for it, but a lot of work that needs to be done still.
So if you looked a year back, you know, where we were last year and where we're now, are you sort of far more positive that of what's happening in terms of energy in South Africa?
Yeah, so I think we've seen, you know, what we were focusing on a year ago is just trying to make sense of load shedding, making sure that it actually just doesn't continue to get even worse. There were lots of discussions and talks about blackouts, and going even, beyond stage six. So we've moved through that. We've also moved through the policy kind of quagmire. We've now got the ERA amendment bill done. The new transmission company is registered. The unbundling of Eskom's going ahead. The transmission development plan is moving forward towards implementation. We're now in the space where I think the rest of the world is kind of battling with similar challenges in the energy transition. It's just that they're a lot more mature and they're probably 10, sometimes 15 years ahead of us. So we've got a lot of catch up to do, but I think the benefit and the upside is that we can take a lot of learnings and we can leapfrog in certain areas if we look to international partners. And we do need that international support and help. But I think it's a much more mature conversation. But we're in the energy transition game, whereas previously, to be honest, we were just trying to keep the lights on.
James Buchanan, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thanks very much for having me.